endless cotton crops had sucked the nutrients out of southern soil. Post-Civil War farmers faced scorched lands and scrawny crops. And George Washington Carver, who was a professor at Alabama's Tuskegee Institute, he offered a solution. Change crops, restore nutrients and fertility to the soil. Grow sweet potatoes and cowpeas and soybeans and, most of all, peanuts. But Carver couldn't convince the farmers. It took a boll weevil to do that. And out of Mexico, they swarmed through Texas into Louisiana and Mississippi. And by 1915, that cotton-consuming bug had reached Alabama. Carver saw the plague as an opportunity. Burn off your invested cotton, he pleaded, and plant peanuts. But who would buy them? An elderly widow knocked on Carver's door, and after planting and harvesting peanuts, she still had more than 100 pounds left over, and she wasn't alone. Carter discovered barns and storehouses piled high with peanuts. They were rotting in the field for lack of a market. And years later, he recalled how he retreated to his favorite spot in the woods, seeking God's wisdom. "Oh, Mr. Creator," he cried out, "why did you make this universe?" And the Creator answered, "You want to know too much for that little mind of yours. Ask me something that's more your size." So I said, "Dear Mr. Creator, tell me what man was made for." And again he spoke to me and he said, "Little man, you are still asking for far more than you can handle. Cut down the extent of your request and improve the intent." Well, then I asked my last question, "Mr. Creator, why did you make the peanut?" "Ah, that's better," the Lord said. And he gave me a handful of peanuts and went back with me to the laboratory, and together we went down to work. Working day and night, Carter tore apart that peanut, unlocked the chemical magic that would turn loss into profit, and in less than 5 years, his section of Alabama was the wealthiest section in the state. And during his lifetime, Carver extracted more than 300 different products from the peanut. Find your peanut. The task, the tailor-made task that honors God, that helps others and thrills you. He custom designed you. You're one of a kind. And God gave you a uniqueness, a talent, a skill set that's yours alone to honor Him. Trust even little deeds. For example, in World War II, had decimated Germany. Citizens clamored for supplies, and Russia reduced Berlin's buildings to skeletons, sought to do the same with its people. They blockaded food, heading trucks, trains, and boats. And without help, the city would soon starve. So the U.S. and British military put together a 1948 airlift. So for 11 months, they dropped tons of food to the 2.5 million Berliners. Gail Harvelson piloted one of the planes for the United States. And after landing in Berlin one day, the 27-year-old talked with 30 or so German children who were on the other side of a barbed wire fence. And though hungry and needy, they didn't beg or complain. An impressed Halverson reached into his pocket and produced two little sticks of chewing gum, which he divided in half and handed the pieces through this wire. Those kids looked like they had just received $1 million. They put that tiny piece of paper to their noses and smelled the aroma. They were on cloud nine. I stood there dumbfounded. Touched by their plight, Gale promised to return the next day and drop more gum from his plane. With supply flights landing nearly every half hour, the children asked how were they to recognize his. He said, "Well, I'll wiggle my wings." And Halverson returned to Rhein-Main Air Force Base, and he bought gum and candy from the other soldiers. And he tied the sweets to tiny little handkerchief parachutes. He loaded them on his C-54, and true to his word, he wiggled his wings as he dropped the kids' treats out of the aircraft. Kids in the tiny city streets spotted their friend. They ran to gather the falling candy, and Operation Little Vittles began. Momentum mounted quickly. Within 3 weeks, the Air Force sanctioned the crusade. So during the following months, U.S. aircraft dropped 3 tons of candy on the city. The pilot became known as Uncle Wiggle Wings. Do small deeds make a difference? Halverson thinks they do. And of greater importance, Jesus thinks they do. He says in Matthew 13:31, "The kingdom of heaven is like a mustard seed planted in a field. It is the smallest of seeds, but it becomes the largest of garden plants and grows into a tree where birds can come and find shelter in its branches." And Jesus also used this illustration. The kingdom of heaven is like yeast used by a woman making bread. And even though she used a large amount, 3 measures of flour, the yeast permeated every part of the dough. Original readers caught quickly the pictures in these parables. They knew mustard seeds and leaven lumps. Both were small. The seed, the size of a freckle, it takes 750 to even weigh 1 gram. The leaven no larger than the end of your thumb. Yet a tiny mustard seed can erupt, reach for the clouds, growing up to 3 times the size of the average Jewish person, boasting bushy branches large enough to house a homeless flock of birds. A pinch of fermented dough could feed 40 people 3 meals a day for several days, and what begins minutely ends massively. Well, maybe the early church needed the reminder. What clout does a tiny manger and a bloody cross carry in the forest of Jewish tradition and Greek philosophy? How can a backwoods movement headed by a rural carpenter gain traction in the religious world, dominated by Epicureans, Stoics, Gnostics? Yeah, it's like a kid on a skateboard trying to enter the Daytona 500. And Max Lucado asks, don't we need a reminder today? We at times perhaps fear the smallness of Jesus' story. Our fear might keep us from seed sowing. Can the Sunday school accounts of Jesus hold its own in the Ivy League? Do terms like sin and salvation and redemption and hell stand a chance in this sophisticated day of humanism, relativism, woke culture? Apparently they do. Where are the Romans who crucified Christ? The Epicureans who demeaned and debated Paul? The Gnostics who marked the early church and the great temples of Corinth? They dwarf the infant church. Do worshipers still sacrifice to Zeus? No, but they still sing to Jesus. God does uncommon works through common deeds. a friend of Max's, saw proof of that truth as he cared for victims in Hurricane Katrina. Being a physician, he gave his time and talent to treat some of the 12,500 New Orleans residents who ended up in San Antonio. One survivor told this riveting story about as the waters rose around the house, this New Orleanian swam out a window. With two children clinging to his back, the man found safe refuge on the tallest building in the neighborhood. Other people joined him on the roof, and soon there was a small circle of people that were huddled together on what would be their home for 3 days until they were rescued. After about an hour on the building, the man realized he was on a church. He patted the rooftop and he announced to the others, "We are on holy ground." His news jogged the memory of another roof dweller. She looked around the area and she crawled over to the steeple and hugged it and proclaimed, "My grandfather and grandmother helped build this church." Do you think those grandparents ever imagined that their church would be used to save their granddaughter? They surely prayed for God to use that church building for the saving of souls, but they couldn't have imagined how he would use it to save their grandchild from a hurricane. They had an idea how God would, no idea of how God would use the work of their hands, nor do you. On my first mission trip to Kenya, I was invited to speak at a local village church on Sunday. And after the service, the pastor said, "Come with me, I want to show you something." And he took me to where they had a pile of bricks, and they had members who were bringing in a brick or two each Sunday if they could. They had 24 orphaned children in their congregation that other parents were trying to take care of. And he said, "We'd like to build them a house so that they can have a place of their own." He said, "Would you buy us a truckload of bricks or even a wheelbarrow of bricks? It would be an encouragement to us." So I thought, well, I could do that. And we bought the first truckload of bricks. A year later, in 2001, the house was completed. We built another dorm. We found resources in Richmond that would help us find sponsors for the children. We founded an organization in Colorado Springs that would go 50-50 on the building of dorms or clinics. We found a group in Montana that would administer funds and see that they were put and that there was accountability. And we built more dorms. We built a little two-room clinic that had a sign on it that said, "We treat, Jesus heals." And that was, and now we built a GECO, a kitchen, make good pizzas in it. And now, in 2019, Angie and my grandson Corey and Diana and I went and visited St. Carl Hall. 92 children there. That was 2019. That's like 18 years after the start. That project has impacted many children to come to know the Lord, to come to help their fellow kinsmen, and how to teach the Bible and live Christian lives. What difference do little deeds make? Do you wonder if your work makes any difference? When that divine spark within us begins to flame, should you douse it or fan it? Do you dare to dream that what you do makes a difference? God's answer would be, just do something. See what happens. That's what he told the citizens of ancient Jerusalem, and for 16 years the temple of God had him and had lain in ruins. They had abandoned the work. The reason? Opposition from enemies, indifferences from neighbors. But most of all, the job dwarfed them. To build the first temple, Solomon had needed 70,000 carriers, 80,000 stone cutters, 3,300 foremen, and 7 years. It was a gargantuan task. The workers must have thought, what difference will my work make? God's answer is found in Zechariah 4:10. Do not despise these small beginnings, for the Lord rejoices to see the work begin. And I wanted to add a footnote to the St. Carl orphanage story. You bought them a new Toyota van as a school bus last year. Little gifts that go together. If you just begin, begin. What seems small to you may be huge to someone else. You can just ask Bon Fox for doing World War II. He piloted a B-17. One mission, he sustained flak from Nazi anti-aircraft guns. Even though his gas tanks were hit, the plane did not explode, and Fox was able to safely land it back at the base. And on the morning following the raid, Fox asked his crew chief for the German shell. He wanted to keep it as a souvenir of his incredible good fortune. And the crew chief responded to him saying, there was not just one shell, there were 11 in your gas tanks, and not one of them had exploded. And technicians opened the missiles and found them void of explosive charge. They were clean, harmless, and with one exception, empty. The exception contained a carefully rolled piece of paper. On it, a message had been scrawled in the Czech language. Translated, the note read, "This is all we can do for you for now." A courageous assembly line worker was disarming Bob's, scribbled the note. He couldn't end the war, but he could save a plane. He couldn't do everything, but he could do something, and so he did it. God does big things with small deeds. Against a towering giant, a brook pebble seems futile, but God used it to topple Goliath. Compared to the tithes of the wealthy, a widow's coins seem puny, but God used them to inspire us. And in contrast with the sophisticated priests and the powerful Roman rulers, a cross suspended carpenter seemed nothing but a waste of life. Few Jewish leaders even mourned his death, and only a handful of friends buried his body. The people turned their attention back to the temple. And why not? What power does a buried rabbi have? But we know the answer. Mustard seeds and leaven lumps, power. Power to tear away death rags, to push away death rocks, power to change history. In the hands of God, small seeds grow into sheltering trees. Tiny leaven expands into nourishing loaves. Small deeds can change the world. So sow the mustard seed, bury the leaven lumps, make the call, write the check, organize the committee, drop some gum from your airplane. 60 years from now, another soldier might follow your example. Chief Wiggles did. No, not the Uncle Wiggly Wings of Berlin fame, but Chief Wiggles of Iraq. And like Halverson, his story began at a fence with a child. And like the candy bomber, his work began by giving a gift. He noticed there was a little girl on the other side of the stretch of barbed wire in Baghdad. She was obviously very poor. In her tattered old dress, totally worn out plastic flip-flops, her hair matted against her head, indicating she hadn't had a bath in a long time. Her skin blistered from the dirt and weather. And the soldier remembered some toys in his office, so he hurried back and brought the girl a toothbrush, a whistle, and a toy monkey. And as he gave the gifts, quote, her eyes lit up with so much joy. He posted his experience on his web blog, and thousands of people responded, asking where they could send gifts. And so Operation Give was born. And the soldier who inherited Halverson's nickname, Chief Wiggles. Moses had a staff. David had a sling. Samson had a jawbone. Rahab had a string. Mary had some ointment, and Aaron had a rod. Dorcas had a needle. All were used by God. What do you have? In Leading with the Heart, Dr. Allison Forsheims writes about the kindest kind of curiosity. It had been an eventful morning at the aquarium. Emma's elementary class was enjoying a field day, and I was happy to be there as a chaperone. Emma and her friends had marveled at otters darting around underwater, delicately interacting with stingrays at the touch pool, patiently waited for a sloth named Squidney to wake up, though sadly she never did, observed the graceful movements of sea turtles, witnessed the charming sight of penguins eating their breakfast. It must have been the sight of those hungry penguins that made one of the kids say, hey, let's have a lunch break. And so they too were hungry. So they decided to take a break from the aquarium and go outside and sit in a grassy area under a tree and have a little snack. And the students began opening their small boxes, bringing out the oranges and the apples and the cookies and the crackers. And the students began to talk about what they had done and what they had seen. And I started the conversation by asking them what they enjoyed the most. And four hands quickly shot up. Two of them enjoyed watching the otters chase each other under the water. Emma said she liked the sea turtles, but she saw that one of them had a crack in his shell, and perhaps that's why he was no longer in the ocean. I looked down toward the other end to the other student who hadn't made a sound, hadn't shared at all. She was just busy peeling her orange. Our eyes briefly met before she quickly looked back down again. What did you think? I gently pressed. Oh, I'm not sure, she murmured softly. She looked back then and resumed peeling her orange. And then something beautiful happened. One of the boys pointed to her orange and said, I like how you are peeling that orange in one big, long piece. That's amazing. The girl looked up. Her eyes brightened. She proudly held up the dangling orange peel, saying it wasn't her longest continuous peel she had ever made, but it was a pretty good one. And for the next few minutes, the students asked her questions about her orange and the peel with genuine curiosity. And after each question was asked, they eagerly awaited her answer. Where did she get the orange? The orange tree came from their backyard, where they also had a grapefruit tree and two orange trees and one lemon tree. And they used to have a lime tree, but it turned brown and her dad had dug it up. There's still a small hole where the tree used to be. Last week I put some seeds in it, but they haven't started to grow yet. Does she bring an orange every day for lunch? Yes, but sometimes when there aren't any oranges in there on their trees, she has to bring one from the grocery store, but they just don't taste as good. I sat back and watched this sweet group of children rally around this little girl, connecting to her, supporting her by focusing on what she was interested in. It was the kindest kind of curiosity, showing her that what mattered to her mattered to them. Taking a sincere interest in what holds significance for others is one of the nicest things we can do. We can help others learn about God's grace through your words, through your actions. Speak kindly, provide a listening ear, find small ways to lend a hand when someone needs it. God inhabits the tiny seed. He empowers the tiny deed. Every act of kindness. I close with John Wesley. Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can. Do not discount the smallness of your deeds done in Jesus' name. Selah.